Welcome to Bina, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of Bina, our guest is the U.S. Senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, whose new book is Antitrust, Taking on Monopoly Power from the Gilded Age to the Digital Age. She's joined in conversation by MSNBC's Joe Scarborough. And now join Holly Pfeffer as she introduces Amy Klobuchar and Joe Scarborough.
I am so pleased to welcome you to this very special book festival in your living room, featuring Senator Amy Klobuchar, the senior senator from Minnesota, in conversation with former Congressman Joe Scarborough, co-host of NBC's Morning Joe and himself a best-selling author. The two are going to be talking about Senator Klobuchar's timely new book, a New York Times national bestseller, Antitrust, Taking on Monopoly Power from the Gilded Age to the Digital Age. As a ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Antitrust, Competition Policy, and Consumer Rights, Senator Klobuchar provides a fascinating exploration of antitrust in America and offers a way forward to protect all Americans from the dangers of competition through monopolies. It's meticulously researched, and it's truly an amazing and compelling read. Our moderator this evening is Joe Scarborough, co-host of MSNBC's Morning Joe alongside Mika Brzezinski. In addition to his celebrated television career, Joe is a two-time New York Times best-selling author himself. His most recent book is Saving Freedom, Truman, the Cold War, and the Fight for Western Civilization. Joe served as a Republican congressman from Florida from 1994 to 2001. While in office, he was a member of the Judiciary, Armed Services Oversight, and National Security Committees. And our esteemed author tonight, Senator Amy Klobuchar. She's the senior senator from Minnesota since 2007, the first woman from that state to be elected to the U.S. Senate. She was born in Plymouth, Minnesota, and graduated from Yale University and the University of Chicago Law School. She lives in Minneapolis. So please welcome both Senator Klobuchar and Joe Scarborough to our virtual stage.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. So, Senator, it is great to talk to you. It's great. I'm so thankful that you asked me to be part of this because we talked about this even before the book came out. I'm just so excited about it. And I know a lot of people would say, wait a second. So 2020 just ended. You could have written about anything, but you chose to write about antitrust. I'm not one of those people because even before the election, I was, the old lawyer in me, I was buying antitrust horn books and I was trying to figure out what was going on because it's really disturbing. I mean, it's really disturbing out there. Antitrust laws have been trampled under. They've been redefined. Antitrust has been redefined in a way that really have allowed companies to get larger and larger and consolidate more and more. Talk about why you wrote about antitrust at this point in time.
Well, I agreed to do the book about 3 years ago before the presidential campaign. And I did a lot of the history, like you. I love history. And I know you're working on a book on Lincoln. Is that right,
Joe? That's right.
Yeah, well, my husband proposed to me on Lincoln's birthday because he was such a big Lincoln fan in the nonfiction aisle of a bookstore. you actually go back in time on antitrust and you go back to our founding fathers where so many of the early settlers in America came over because they wanted, yes, religious freedom, yes, political freedom, but they wanted economic freedom. They didn't want to have to buy their tea from a monopoly tea company. They didn't want to buy everything by British monopolies. They come to America, they're fiercely independent, they think about putting it in the Constitution, and they have this huge discussion with Jefferson and Madison. They go, oh, Madison says, don't worry, it'll get taken care of, you know, by our newly formed Congress. This is like the common system. And it takes 100 years as the monopolies get bigger and bigger, and finally, Getting to Lincoln, after the states are up in arms, farmers are out with pitchforks because they have to sell all their stuff to monopolies, and they've got monopoly trains and monopoly beef trust, and the union movement is coming up. And finally, Senator Sherman, who is the brother of General Sherman of the March to the Sea, they were both right. big Lincoln Republicans, and Senator Sherman passes the Sherman Act, which was the first kind of the Magna Carta of antitrust, saying you can't have monopolies. And from there, we had, years and years of improvement in the antitrust laws, with trust busters like Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson and Taft, actually. And then we'd go ebb and flow, a big moment breakup of AT&T through Democratic and Republican presidents. Really kind of a uniform belief that we want small businesses, we don't want to have gatekeeper monopolies. And then all of a sudden it languished, as you point out, with some really conservative court decisions, which have only gotten worse. And then the laws have been interpreted in ways that really aren't consistent with their original intent. And that led me to want to write this book because it affects people in everyday lives. If you wonder, why insulin or EpiPen went so high, if you, as I tell the story, baby heart drugs, one drug company buys another, they corner the market on a baby heart drug for valve problems. And literally the price goes from $85 to $1,600. I came across that, and they did it for 5 years and ripped off hospitals, ripped off parents, and the FTC tried to sue, but conservative courts say no. And so that's why we have to change the laws, we got to up our enforcement, and we've got to start a movement again to do something about this.
And so I'm sure there are Republicans in the audience, there are conservatives in the audience. I just want to assure everybody despite my feelings about Donald Trump, I'm a very
conservative. What are those? No, I'm kidding.
I'm a conservative guy.
Yes.
I believe in free markets.
Yeah.
I believe in free enterprise. I believe in competition. And though we need regulations, I really believe that competition and the free marketplace actually is the way that our countries thrive through the years. But Senator, this is the antithesis of that. And that's why this is an issue that really should bring liberals, moderates, and true conservatives together, not corporatists, not people that are going to just support big interests. But if you are a free market conservative, you should be horrified by the fact that entrance into the marketplace is blocked time and time again. We focus just on tech, but explain how it's not just big tech. It's like you said, pharmaceuticals, and in so many other areas, because our antitrust laws aren't being interpreted the way they were written.
Exactly. And I worked in the private sector for almost 15 years representing companies. I believe in healthy capitalism. It was Adam Smith, the father of capitalism, who warned of the unbridled power of what he called the army of monopolies. And so that's what, if you believe in small business capitalism, you can't just say, oh, let's just let the big guys dominate and we're not going to have any laws in place and rules of the game. And the other industries outside of tech, online travel, you think you're getting a good deal, you go to all those things, check it out. 90% of them are owned by just two companies. There's consolidation in sunglasses. There's consolidation in cat food to caskets. John Oliver did a funny bit on this for a half an hour about all the consolidation. And he ended by saying, if you are tired of all this consolidation and it makes you want to die, good luck, because there's only three casket makers left. And he looked up the name of them. Well, actually, one has bought the other. So then now there's only two. And so that's why, we had a healthcare consolidation hearing today with Senator Lee. And when you get to the Republican support on this, I had a real breakthrough last week on a bipartisan vote. Senator Grassley, Chuck Grassley, and I, who's a bit of a maverick, we passed our bill to greatly increase the fees that are charged on mergers to give the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and the Department of Justice Antitrust Division, now led by Merrick Garland, who has a firm understanding of antitrust law, to give them over $120 million more to hire lawyers, because you cannot take on the biggest companies the world has ever known with duct tapes and Band-Aid. And we did that bipartisan. And there's a whole number of Republicans now that are coming over to this. It's not just about...
Are they really? Okay, so there are Republicans getting on board, huh?
There are. Now, I want to do... I first get the agency strong enough. That's what this bill is. And then we have to do some appropriations at the end of the year. Secondly, look... change the law so it's easier to take these merger cases on, and also to look back at big consolidation like they did with AT&T and unwind some of this or divest assets. You're not going to destroy and blow up the companies. You're simply going to say, well, WhatsApp, Instagram, wait a minute, Facebook bought them. In the words of Mark Zuckerberg, his own email, because we'd rather buy than compete. Problem under the antitrust laws. And so you can unwind some of that. And then so those are the two things. So the bills right now, those bills, my one big bill is Democratic, but there is Republican interest in pieces of it. And so that's what I'm working on as well.
So and by the way, if you want to just briefly touch on it, feel free to do that. I talked about, asked you about Republicans. Obviously, the Biden administration has made some really key appointments too. Really great thinkers who actually look at antitrust in the traditional sense. And so there may be a chance that actually the Biden administration will interpret antitrust laws the way they were meant to be interpreted.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize that. I do want to make changes to law and give them resources. But so far, they put a guy named Tim Wu, he wrote a book called The Curse of Bigness, which is, of course, the famous phrase by Justice Brandeis about antitrust. And he really thinks outside of the box and is well respected as the economic advisor on antitrust in the White House and technology. And then you've got on the FTC, they put forward the name of Lina Khan, who got overwhelming support in the Commerce Committee, not everyone, but a huge number of Republicans. And she's the one that wrote I know this sounds like a paradox, but a viral law review article about Amazon and monopsonies and about how all of this needs to be looked at in a different way. And so again, another out of the box thinker who I don't think people ever would have thought could get that kind of bipartisan support. And then the as I said, Merrick Garland used to teach antitrust. He handled cases as a judge. So I think all of this is really exciting in terms of having a new breath on this. And I'll note the end of the Trump administration under the leadership of Chairman Simon at the FTC and Machen Delraham at the Department of Justice, they did bring those groundbreaking cases against Google and Facebook. And I think the fact that it started in a Republican administration bodes well, because most of these things that have gone big to make changes have not just been brought by one party. They've been brought over two or three administrations.
Right. You know, speaking of the tech companies, I've never gotten into stocks. I never had the money to invest in stocks. Now that I have some money to invest in stocks, they scare me. You know, it's an inside game, but I called somebody maybe 6 months ago when the markets went down a little bit. I said, I hate investing in stocks, but am I being really stupid here? There's some stocks to invest in. His quick reply to me was, he's the smartest business person I know. His quick reply was, well, of course there are, buy the monopolies. And I laughed, I go, the monopolies? He goes, and I thought he was joking. He goes, I'm not joking. They're monopolies. I go, okay, well, what are the monopolies? He goes, duh. Amazon's a monopoly. Microsoft's a monopoly. Google's a monopoly. Salesforce is a monopoly. And he said, PayPal was a monopoly, not as much of a monopoly. He goes, but by the monopolies, they will never go down. And I sat there thinking about it. They are monopolies. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know... when I was actually in Congress, the Justice Department went after Microsoft, but it's still pretty much a monopoly. Nobody's challenging Microsoft. Nobody's challenging Amazon. How do we, and Facebook, of course, is the biggest. How do we I could go on and on about Facebook.
No, I know. And I think people have to, you got to look at each one in their own markets. I'm not going to go through all of them, but Google, you mentioned, they have 90% of the search market. So what's a sign of monopoly? When an entire industrialized nation, Australia, says to them, you know, we want you to pay more for your news content. They said this to Facebook as well. And we think you're not paying enough and it's hurting our news organizations. Those guys just said, you know what? We're going to pull out of your country and leave you with no one. Microsoft said, oh, we'll step in, but they had less than 5% of the search market. So finally, there was so much international pressure that they stayed in and started negotiating. But and we in the U.S. have a bill to try to do something about that to give the news organizations the clout to be able to coordinate to negotiate with the tech companies. That's something I have with Senator Kennedy, actually. But that just is an example. Or you've got, as we discuss with retail, Amazon, or you've got Apple with these app stores. An amazing story where certain of their actual competitors, like Spotify, to use the App Store, which has basically become the modern web on Apple phones, they have to pay 30% of their revenues to Apple. And they can't say when they're with all of the business they have to do on the app stores, oh, you can get a cheaper deal on our website. And that was a very bipartisan hearing we had with Senator Lee and I had about a month ago on that. And I think there's going to be a lot of things going on with that.
Yeah. What about Facebook? Let's talk about my pet peeve with Facebook. They're basically a monopoly. And also the part that concerns me the most is they have such a disproportionate share of the news market, in that, you know, over 50% of people get their news from Facebook, and yet they're not treated like a publisher. They can print anything. It would be like if Walter Cronkite had over 50% of the market back in the 1960s, 1970s, and he could let Russian, you know, Soviet propagandists come on beyond the reach of the government or regulators. Why can't they be treated like publishers? Why can't they be broken up like we broke up the Bells?
Right, exactly. So Facebook, and here's the argument for the antitrust laws. You can put regulations in place, say on privacy. We have no federal privacy law to apply to these guys. But what you'd really like to do, you and I believing in capitalism, is unleash the power of the marketplace to come up with the bells and whistles that would do something about misinformation, like vaccines and how that's been hurting us with the kind of bull that people read that you know, they're getting a microchip inserted with the vaccine.
Right.
Or a company that would do something about privacy. But when they buy up everything in sight, like Instagram and WhatsApp, and they actually say, like he did in emails, where he said, these companies may be nascent, but their brands are meaningful, and because they were so small, right? And they could be disruptive to us. Competition is about disruption. Tech is supposed to be about disruption. And so my argument here is you can use the antitrust laws as they are, you can strengthen them as well. And that's what these lawsuits are about, to say, hey, wait a minute, you need to divest these assets because these companies could compete with you. So I think that's key. And it is about creating an atmosphere where you can have the next Facebook emerge. You don't destroy the existing Facebook, you just create competitors that are going to give you different options than just relying on one and then just saying, trust me. But it's got to be a combination of some regulation and then also, competitive forces that are really going to bring in the new ideas, because otherwise they're going to eat everything in sight. And it's bad for employees because the people who want to work for them, if they have some special skills, monopolies, you don't get as good a deal if you have only one person you can work for.
You're listening to the U.S. Senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, whose new book is Antitrust, Taking on Monopoly Power from the Gilded Age to the Digital Age. She's joined in conversation by MSNBC's Joe Scarborough. On Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So I've written quite a few books, policy books that three people read, and they're on deficits, debt, inflation. And I always found it was fascinating that people always said they seemed to care about it. But every time I'd go around to promote it, nobody really wanted to talk about those issues. They weren't like hot button issues. They wanted to talk about whether it was impeachment of Bill Clinton at the time or the Iraq War or whether it was about Barack Obama just getting elected. It was hard to get them to focus on, runaway national debt. So let me ask you, in this case, with antitrust, it's not one of those hot button topics.
Really?
It's not about the insurrection. It's not about the sort of things that maybe people will get really excited about. How do you get a movement going around a topic like antitrust that is so important, but may not be something that people naturally jump to?
Right. Like, we don't have campaign songs like they did in Teddy Roosevelt's about antitrust, trust song for, I think, Woodrow Wilson. And what I think you need to do is to really make the case to people, like I just did with that drug story with the baby heart drug, the reality of this and how it hits their lives. And you're starting to see so many people talk about things are too big and I don't like this situation, worried about their privacy, worried about other things. And then you've got to lead. And as you know, from being in Congress, Joe, sometimes you just have to lead as an elected official. I think that's what you're starting to see happen. Baby steps, yes, but that's just starting to happen. And that's why I wrote this book. I made it. I used over 100 cartoons to make it more interesting. I did everything I could. I did call it, even though I think it should be called competition policy, because then you can encompass other things like immigration reform, non-compete agreements, all kinds of things. I called it antitrust because I thought it was kind of a metaphor for what's happening right now. And also, as you know, from the debate stage with my chief rival, but actual friend, Pete Buttigieg, he wrote a book this fall called Trust. So I thought I would call mine antitrust so that our rivalry would never end. In any case, I just urge people to read it. And at the end, I have a roadmap of 25 things, a third of them for Congress, a third of them for the new administration, and then a bunch of things that regular people can do, like giving them a list of different sites they can get on to get updates on what's happening. Obviously calling their member of Congress, asking them what they're doing on antitrust, just getting more informed about it. I don't expect people to follow all these complex court cases and what the economists are saying, because the problem is that's what's happened to this subject. It's become the subject of these high paid consultants and people on both sides. And I just think you need to get regular people. They know by instinct if there's not enough choices. And they also know what happens to them, not just with consumer prices, but why is it so hard for the biggest companies in the world to give them their privacy or to not have misinformation or a bunch of discriminatory content on their platforms? They know that they could do better.
You know, it's so interesting talking to you about antitrust that obviously so many Americans are concerned about the fact that Republicans and Democrats haven't been able to get together much over the past 20 years or so. The division seems to continue to be growing in a lot of different areas. But it sounds like an antitrust. There's actually a possibility of a bipartisan breakthrough. You could even get to 60 votes on certain type of legislation. What is that legislation right now? If you had to guess, if you push this really hard and Americans got engaged on it, what would that legislation look like that could pass with 60 votes?
So I think the first thing passing on its own will be this fee bill, because we want to get the resources right there. And I also thought it was important to have a victory right off. So I think that's going to happen. Just believe me on this. Then you've got the next one is some of the things I talked about. Now, you could do, say, special bills on certain industries. There's a bunch of things you can do with pharma, Medicare negotiation, bringing in less expensive drugs. Tech is an area of common interest. You could do something on the app stores. You can do something to limit the gatekeeper behavior. But what I would rather see, if I could just wave a magic wand, is probably the hardest thing to do, is to just do some, I don't consider them at all radical, broader things. Like, say, if you've got a mega merger over $5 billion, then you've got to show that it doesn't hurt competition as opposed to making the government prove that. That's called burden shifting, and it would make a big difference in all of this consolidation. Or looking backwards at what we call exclusionary behavior. That's when you, like, you put your own products at the top of the search engine, or you reference your own type of, your own offering, your own product, that you say, nope, that's not okay, you can't do that. And then you get penalized to do it. Bigger fines, we have a provision for that. And I think there could be a lot of support for that to make it really hurt. Because, you know, right now when Facebook got fined $5 billion. That sounds like a lot to you and me. But when they got fined $5 billion for Cambridge Analytica and hurting 85 million people's privacy and violating the conditions of a consent, their stock went up because it was viewed as just a slap on the wrist by the market. Yeah. And so these companies are making, literally in a few days, the entire budget of the antitrust division of the Justice Department. So, you know, that that's what we're dealing with. And that's why I think really taking them on in a big strategic way is going to be really important. And it's not, I don't have, I love that we have these new products. I wear a Fitbit. I've got an iPhone. I don't like, I'm happy that we've employed people and we've given the world some of those options, especially during the pandemic. But just because we went after AT&T and we did incredible work, our government, we reduced long distance rates. We took the cell phone industry because of the forced breakup of AT&T from a, you know, Gordon Gekko briefcase, big cell phone to what it is today. And that maybe wasn't, there was the arguments made back then, oh, wait a minute, it might be bad for security, but AT&T did so many good things. Yes, they did. But in their own words of their own chairman, they came out of it a stronger company because they were forced to compete. And that was, of course, a vertical monopoly. They owned all the stuff under them, all the equipment. And then it was a horizontal monopoly, which would be, since we're in a lot of people in Atlanta, it would be like Coke merging with Pepsi, right? It creates this a monopoly over all of the phone products at the time. And that's why they were broken up, and it gave us some really good stuff. And so I don't think people should be afraid of it.
Well, you're talking about AT&T. Let's talk about not just AT&T currently, yet another consolidation of that media company, but we could talk about, obviously, Comcast has been a company that writes my checks, has been trying to merge with one media company after another. And it's so fascinating that we started, when you and I were growing up, maybe I'm older than you, there were three channels. You had ABC, CBS, NBC. If you're lucky, your antenna would pick up all three, and then you get PBS. And we've seen this explosion of cable, and now there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of channels. Now every media company knows that in 5 years, 7 years, 8 years, we're going to be reduced back down to four, maybe five massive streaming companies. So you'll have Apple, you'll have, you know, you'll have Netflix, you'll have, you know, go down the list of the four or five, but they all believe only four or five are going to survive. And we're going to be back in 2030 where we were in 1972, where we're going to have like four or five choices because of this consolidation.
Well, and I think that's why it's so important to have this active Justice Department that's basically, when they do these deals, sometimes they reject them, as you know, with one of the Comcast deals. And then sometimes they okay them, which they did with another. But then they're supposed to put these conditions on them. if they do that. And sometimes it means saying, okay, you can buy this company in this area, but you're going to have to not buy that part. You got to sell that part, because otherwise you would be the gateway company for, I'm making this up, you know, 80% of the business. And so they have to, but if they don't enforce those and they don't make them dot the I's and cross the T's, you've got a real problem. And this interesting, I was the AT&T thing that just happened is, of course, they ended up spinning off the basically the merger that they had made to put the content somewhere so they could focus on phone service. So that would be a different situation, I think. It's not the, and in fact, the Macon Delraheim, who had brought the case against AT&T, Time Warner originally, he actually, his quote was, see, I told you so, that this wouldn't work, even though they were competitive. He had done that in the Trump administration. So they ended up splitting it up anyway. So,
yeah. Any final thoughts on the book before we open it up to questions?
The cartoons are funny. They're good. There's a lot of footnotes that my husband wrote all of them, and I kept every one of them in to save our marriage. He is a law professor, so he did a lot of the legal research. So they're very dense, but you don't have to read every footnote. I had no legal researcher. We kind of did it. So I think that people like that. Oh, there's really great, some great stories, like of the woman who invented the Monopoly board. And she invented the Monopoly name board. Her name was Lizzie McGee. She hated monopolies, and that's why she did it. And then in the first time in the history of America, a man took credit for a woman's work, Joe. Never happened again.
Never happened before.
This Atlantic City guy took her idea, sold it to Parker Brothers. She got totally screwed and got $500 out of it. But there is a picture of her with the original Monopoly board. There's just some very cool stories of people, women especially, who were involved in this early on. So that's my
point. I'll have to tell Mika that story, because Mika always tells the story whenever she does Know Your Value about how you can have 18 men sitting around the table and two women. A woman will come up with a great idea. Yeah. Some other guy will repeat the idea 5 minutes later, and all the guys will turn and go, great idea. So I'm going to give her this Monopoly board.
Yes, she should read this section. Board. It's very funny. But the Obama White House actually started to talk about it at like meetings. They'd say, okay, you just did that. Good. All right. Holly.
I love it. Thank you for bringing me back in, because there's some great questions for you. So let me start with this first one, Senator Klobuchar. How do you propose to have some impact in the pharmaceutical and biotechnology area, but not do anything to negatively impact innovation? How would you take into account the large amounts of money that are needed to do research and development, run clinical trials in order to develop and commercialize new drugs, vaccines, diagnostics, and medical devices? As we've seen over the last year, innovation in the US by pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies has had a major impact in providing vaccines for COVID, for example.
Yes, excellent. And we're very proud of that. And big is not necessarily bad. It's just, is there competition? And you can have big companies that are competitive in some areas and not in others. But the answer can't be, oh, let's go be like China in order to compete with China and just have one company. One of the reasons we got to this point where we were able to do this incredible work on vaccines is that we did have a number of companies through time and places for people to develop their ideas, especially internationally. That being said, you have clear examples in the pharma area, probably more clear than any other area, where something will happen with a certain drug like insulin, which had always been cheap. And then all of a sudden a generic gets off the market, someone else gets off the market, and the ones remaining go, let's go for it. They raise the price. EpiPen, when there wasn't a competitor for a while, those prices went through the roof. You see this time and time again. So the answer to me is yes, the antitrust laws enforce them, and they have been enforced over the years, but reinvigorate that. But then also do some specific things that would really be helpful for the millions of seniors out there to negotiate prices under Medicare through the government would be very helpful to them. To bring in less expensive drugs drugs from other countries. I think that would greatly help safe countries. That was a bill I had with Senator McCain, and now Senator Grassley's doing it with me with strong support from Bernie Sanders. You've got ideas that we did with Senator Lee and Grassley, and Senator Leahy led this bill to make sure generics can get their products on the market. Because they're great competitors. And the all-time funny example of what monopolies do to limit competition, the big pharma companies sometimes, and they did it before in a big, big way before a court decision came down, pay off their generic competitors to keep their products off the market. It's called pay for delay. So everyone benefits except us. And so I think those are examples that anyone that looks at them says, wait a minute. And you can still have major companies that develop drugs and do great things. But I think allowing for that competition is going to be better for everyone.
You know, insulin, talking about insulin is so important. I have a son who's a type 1 diabetic, and I have seen insulin prices explode over the past 15, 20 years. I've asked why, and I'm like, have they updated? No, it's the same insulin. It's the same product. They can just get away with it. And because people have heard me talking about Andrew, I'm fortunately very blessed. We're able to afford Andrew's insulin. But I've had people on planes. I've had people walking around my neighborhood, just saying, hey, I can't afford my insulin and my child's tuition. I can't afford. And you talk about they're not being melodramatic. They don't know what to do. This isn't like some 30-second political ad. This is, this is life. And the only way drug companies are getting away with this, selling the same thing they've been selling for 20 years and charging, five times, 10 times as much, is their monopolies.
Mm-hmm. Because they can.
So they can be monopolies over certain types of drugs, and that just shouldn't happen. So, and there's ways you can step in and make sure it doesn't happen, including bringing in less expensive drugs. If they're going to charge so much, that triggers something where you can start looking at safe foreign options, and then that will probably make them not want to charge that much, and then they won't trigger it. Things like that.
Mindy Shaw says, can you please comment on the impacts of private equity firms acquiring smaller private businesses such as retail or healthcare and building monopolies? Do you see any strategies for addressing this change that can protect small business owners and the employees that they employ?
Sure. So this came up today, actually, at our hospital consolidation hearing about equity firms buying out hospitals and things like that, with a weird meeting of the minds between just the pair you'd imagine, Richard Blumenthal, who's a good guy, and Josh Hawley. Okay, they were both. That's what I mean. What's going on? Yeah. But there is a problem. And again, I just keep going back to antitrust, because if you start looking at ownership and what's happening and making sure that there is competition, you get to that. There's also the problem right now of, and this is a complicated area, which we'll put, I won't go on, but it's basically hedge funds, and they are cross horizontally. They have large ownership in, let's say, railroads. And Warren Buffett, he sold them, but he owned almost the biggest stock or one of the biggest stock holdings in almost every major airline, right? So they start having horizontal shareholding, it's called. They start having mega, mega influence in all the competitors at the same time. And there's a guy at Harvard who's actually looked into all this. I suggest we have to study it more, because you don't want to hurt small institutional investors. But that is another piece where the financial markets really play out when it comes to antitrust, in addition to this, what we're talking about with the ownership from the outside. We've certainly seen that in newspapers when hedge funds are coming in and doing and buying things.
Yeah. And Cam has a good question. She said, I found your book very informative, since big tech and other mega companies like Walmart are popular with consumers. Do you worry that increased regulations, taxation, even breaking them up, will hurt what consumers love about them? For example, convenience, low prices, and large inventory.
No, I don't worry about that at all, because I think that what we're talking about here is not blowing up our whole economy. We're looking, if history is a guide, every time this has happened, it's actually improved things for consumers when you have a big mega company and you simply allow for more competition. And again, not destroying their products. No one's going to take them away, but it's simply creating some market conditions by divesting assets where those companies are allowed. We will never know if Instagram and WhatsApp would have developed the privacy or misinformation. We won't know because Mark Zuckerberg bought them. And so if we want to do that, you've got to start allowing many things to flourish. And that's not happening right now.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's guest is the senior U.S. Senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, whose new book is Antitrust, Taking on Monopoly Power from the Gilded Age to the Digital Age. She's joined in conversation by MSNBC's Joe Scarborough. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
Well, the only thing I'd say about that is that if you just look at the price, if you just look at whether a rake costs you X amount or maybe 10% more, then you're not looking at the entire picture. You get Walmart, you get a superstore, you get Sam's Club, you get all these superstores, you get Amazon. But what we've seen is we've seen towns that I've grown up in, whether it was in Meridian, Mississippi, or whether it was in upstate New York, or even Pensacola, Florida, we've seen small businesses get wiped out. We've seen local hardware stores get wiped out. We've seen local stores where you would go and you would get service and you would know the person that was giving you that service. They would do more than just sell you a rake, or they would do more than sell you a lawnmower. If something went wrong, you could go back in, say, I've got this problem, whatever. And you actually had a relationship with the business owner, with a small business owner. So is Pensacola Hardware going to be able to sell you a lawnmower cheaper than Walmart? Probably not. But at the same time, you're not going to get the service from Walmart that you're going to be getting from a person that you go to church with, or a person that your child goes to school with, or somebody that's in your neighborhood. So, I mean, I'm a free market person and I want prices as low as they can be for consumers, there is a trade-off sometimes. There is a trade-off between me, and I love Amazon. It's the app I use more than any other app. But I know even when I'm making those choices, there are trade-offs that are not good for communities, especially rural communities, whether you're talking about in Northwest Florida or Northern Minnesota.
And the other thing is monopolies can set prices low. So that's what they do a lot, right? They can set prices low for a long time, really great. Then everyone else goes away, and then they have the power to raise them because there's no one else to compete with. And that has happened throughout history as well. And then I saw in the chat line, someone asked a very exciting question of what's the definition of monopsony. What that is about is that there's one buyer, and this is kind of the end. So you have sellers, small sellers. It seems great, right? They can sell to this one buyer, but pretty soon they only have one buyer to sell to. And so then they don't make the returns that they would if they had other buyers to sell to. And it's another way. And I actually take that on in this legislation as well, another way to have monopolies.
Sonia Vogelman says, how do you get these monopolies to pay taxes? Because as we know, you know, the apples of the world, a lot of it goes overseas. What do we do?
Well, I mean, first of all, that's a big question for one of the things that Joe Biden's taking on right now is how do you, in two ways, make sure people are taxed at a rate? I thought that the Trump tax bill went way too far. You know, you could have reduced the corporate rate As we, a bunch of us in the middle were saying, to, you know, somewhere 25, 26. And I was, you know, happy to go up where Biden is right now in his proposal. But Trump went way down, and every point he went down was $100 billion. And that doesn't matter if it really, if they're monopolies or not, that's what's happening. The second thing is when people are putting money overseas and not having to pay enough taxes, which is part of the Biden proposal to do something about that. But when it does come to tech, there's something else people should consider. And that is that we are all profit centers. When you know, you send a an email about a ceiling fan, and then pretty soon, magically, you're getting all these ceiling fan ads that come up. You know, they are using us as profit centers to put advertisements and the like. You could actually start taxing that data when they are using your info, and then that money comes back for use by the taxpayers or individual use. And privacy would allow you to have a better way and a plain language way to decide if you want them to track you or not. And if they are tracking you, how much money do you get off of it? Because you are giving them a service more than you're taking it.
Here's a question. I think sometimes the question is, I think sometimes there's a hype to monopolies that are undeserved. I found that using DuckDuckGo or even Bing search engines instead of Google, one gets equivalent and certainly more focused and relevant results than Google with better privacy. Are there things an individual can do like that as consumers to try to resist monopoly practices?
Yeah. It is hard sometimes, but you can try to look for alternatives that work for you. That is something an individual consumer, an independent can do to use a competitor. But like I said, it is so hard sometimes in certain marketplaces to do that because of monopolies. But that's one of the suggestions that I make in the book.
Well, and I want to follow up on that really quickly. Yeah. And Senator, I wonder what your thoughts are. I had no idea what DuckDuckGo was until I read a Financial Times story where somebody wrote an op-ed saying the East German Secret Service, Stasi, would have loved to have the tracking ability that Google has, and gave a lot of different ideas, and Facebook gave a lot of different ideas on how to protect your privacy. And one of them was to browse with DuckDuckGo because they don't allow you. It's private. They can't follow you. And so if you type in, boy, I need to start jogging, you don't start getting Nike ads every 15 seconds. So how do you work the education side of this? So Americans
remember that's option. Very good question, because for a lot of people, this may be the first time they heard about DuckDuckGo. So I think part of this is when you have monopolies, they have an interest in putting out their own stuff all the time. That's what shows up. That's what the problems with some of these app stores. And I think that's part of enforcement, because there's got to be ways that consumers, that's what a lot of these fights are about. It's connectivity and what shows up on your screen, and whether they can self-preference their own product when they're in one area to another, as opposed to letting these new products, giving them a leg up so they're able to show up on the phones and on the screens. So it actually, I don't keep going back to the same thing, but I will. Taking on these cases, having a Justice Department really taking them on, will give us, if they win these cases, which I think they can, exposure to these options, and it'll be all self-fulfilling. It sort of reminds me of when after Joe Biden won, I had a young person say to me, you know what this has meant for me? I, like some, you know, high schooler, I don't have to lay in bed all night trying to figure out how I'm going to run the United States government like I did during Donald Trump. Well, there's stuff that you could do as consumers, like try to make sure you're electing people that care about this issue of antitrust. But we really can't expect you to, in every area of the economy, try to figure this stuff out. That's what the government's supposed to do for you. They're supposed to make sure you can pursue happiness, right? And that means having choices and an economy that works. And so that's part of what I go back with, having laws that are sophisticated as these major big companies that have taken over our economy, and then having enforcement crews that are going to do the work for you.
Well, that leads right into this question by Christopher. He says, you mentioned drafting small targeted bills, but then Democrats tend to put together massive bills that lumps things in that has nothing to do with the main point of the bills. So how realistic is it that those targeted bills will be drafted and passed?
Okay, so I have a sweeping bill, but since I believe in breaking things up and not having monopolies, I am happy to break it up. So that's what I decided to do. I put a sweeping bill in everything. It is actually all about antitrust. You know, I don't have some of my other solutions in there, like immigration reform is oddly a part of this competitive policy I think you need, and doing something about these non-competes, although those are things. But in this bill is just antitrust. And then you can break things down, which is what I'm pursuing right now with various Republican senators. And that's the Klobuchar-Grassley bill that just passed through the committee is a part of the bigger bill.
Denise Chandler says, should college athletes be paid? Isn't this an antitrust issue?
Well, it is. I know that, first of all, I know that Cory Booker is doing a bunch of work on this because he was talking to me about it. So he's a good person to go and figure out what he's doing on this. But it's about them being basically used as, again, the profit center argument for what they're doing. And I know it's something that I have not been involved in this myself, but it's something that some other senators are looking at. I also think that the employee part of this, taking it out of the college athletes, is often overlooked because traditionally when antitrust law was about workers, because they couldn't have anyone else to go work for, the Pullman company, these company towns, they were. And so out of that came the, as I mentioned before, the labor movement. But there have been some more modern day suits. For instance, Silicon Valley made a, some of the CEOs made a deal. They wouldn't hire each other's people for if something occupation like coders. That resulted in a major, major litigation. You can't do that, right? They are colluding to say, well, we won't hire your guys if you don't hire ours. And what happens when you do that? That brings the wages down, of course. And so that there was, that was, it resulted in fines. And I bring that up, not that that's the answer to the college question, but there is a lot of labor interaction and people getting paid fairly as a basis for the reason for the antitrust laws.
Ken Rubin asks, given the Supreme Court's retreat from per se scrutiny of all but the most pernicious of horizontal agreements, do you think that Congress?
Well, that's a, that is just a softball question from some regular viewer.
Do you think that Congress should legislate per se applicability or to more conduct? And if so, what types of conduct? And if not, why not?
Yeah, so I think that we have to do more to legislate when it comes to the conduct and the exclusionary conduct. And I think that this example, what he's talking about with this case, is that literally plaintiffs in antitrust case at one point went 0-15 before the Supreme Court. The two justices, Amy Coney Barrett doesn't have much of a record at all in this, but the Gorsuch and Kavanaugh literally were like lockstep with the Bork theories when you look back over their decisions before they came to the court. And Gorsuch especially has continued that, where they basically look at the standard for antitrust cases and say, well, it's this Bork, well, Judge Bork's consumer welfare standard, which means that it's, they look at not just how an individual consumer is affected, but it's how is a monopoly affected, how is efficiency affected. And what I find really interesting, Joe, is that this was kind of came out of the Reagan era and it was the way to go, leave businesses alone, don't do anything. And now I feel like we are turning full circle because there's a bunch of Republicans out there who are ragging on tech for a good reason. And yet the way the court decisions are going, it makes it really hard to do anything on it. And so it's kind of come full circle. And what I'm hoping is that there will be some change. There was a recent decision that Kavanaugh joined in with the more liberal justices. There may be some change on it, but you got to wait probably decades to get it done through the court, which is getting to the questioner's question. And that's why I think you've got to change some of the standards. And by the way, not radical. We've done it over time. The Clayton Act was a response to the Sherman Act and problems that had to be fixed there. Hart-Scott-Rodino, which was the more recent bill, which was still a long time ago. Through time, we've always looked, oh, what are the problems with the antitrust laws now? Let's plug that hole. Let's do something about it, except for the last 30, 40 years where we really haven't done anything.
And I think one of the changes with Republicans, some Republicans that you're talking to that are finding common cause with you understand now what I understand, which is you've just got to separate small business owners on Main Street, Minnesota, you know, Main Street Duluth or Main Street Pensacola. You've got to separate that from the big banks. You've got to separate that from the huge corporations that are going to be able to use an army of lawyers and an army of lobbyists to protect themselves. And most importantly, what scares me so much is keeping innovators out of the marketplace, keeping new entrepreneurs out of the marketplace, keeping the ideas that flourish. You know, Bill Gates, my God, he started in his father's garage with $5,000 with a bunch of potheads from Berkeley. Boom. And look what happened. But that's not happening now because Bill Gates and Microsoft and all these other tech companies have become so huge that anytime somebody starts gaining momentum, anytime an entrepreneur comes up with a great idea that may gain momentum and compete, what do, Amy? They get bought up, right?
Right.
They get bought up.
And then you lose that independent mavericky company and it becomes part of the bigger company, especially. And that's why Gene Sperling himself has said, you know, when I look back at this now, he wasn't really part of the antitrust decision, but he was looking back at the Obama era in an interview with Kara Swisher. And he said, you know, when I look back at Instagram and WhatsApp, and they seemed like small companies at the time and they okayed them, and it's nothing wrong. And he was saying from a Republican standpoint, but also from a Democratic standpoint of looking back and saying, okay, all the tech companies said, trust us, this is complicated. And, you know, during many, many Democrats and Republicans believed that. And now I think people are starting to say, wait a minute, they're basically making money off of us, and it's causing a lot of trouble. Exhibit A, January 6th and the insurrection. So,
it really is so fascinating that, again, as a conservative, I look at government always as sort of the Goliath. In this case, there's so many parallels between what you're trying to do right now and you talk about the FTC now. It reminds me about what I heard from people that worked for the SEC in 2006, 2007, and 2008, where, you know, they're getting $80,000 salaries going up against lawyers that are getting, what, $5, $6, $10, $20 million, you know, fleet of lawyers together, $50 million, to try to explain to them why credit default swaps make sense and to try to explain why this merger makes sense and that. And it's because, just like you said, the SEC wasn't funded the way the Wall Street banks were funded. And the FTC doesn't stand a chance against Microsoft and Facebook and Apple. It's the David and Goliath model has been reversed here, where the Goliath is the, you know, multi-billion dollar company in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that,
yeah.
There was one question in there and it said, isn't it past Joe's bedtime? Because we know you get up.
Oh, yeah, he's turning into evening Joe because he's supposed to be morning Joe.
End this because we'll feel terrible tomorrow when we turn on TV and see you look tired. So we have to end it.
All right. Well, this was incredible. So thank you, Holly. And thank you, Joe, for caring about this complex issue. Well, and we look forward to talking about it some more. So.
Thank you, Holly, and Senator, thank you so much for doing this. This is such important work, yeah. And I'm just so excited. We can't wait to get you on the show and can't wait to come up to Washington and talk to you about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much. Okay, thank you. You. Everybody, thank you for joining us. Stay happy, stay safe, and stay tuned. We'll see you next time.
Okay. See you.
Bye-bye.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guest was the senior U.S. Senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, whose new book is Antitrust, Taking on Monopoly Power from the Gilded Age to the Digital Age. She was joined in conversation by MSNBC's Joe Scarborough. I'm David Kwan, editor and producer of the program, and Tina Pamintuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rosh Hanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. Thanks for listening.